All right, welcome to the Vertical Shift Podcast. We engage in candid conversation about life topics and real issues from a Christian perspective. I'm Justin.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Tommy.
All right, boys, let's get started.
All right. I'm in a great mood. I just want to say.
Yeah, why's that?
A few reasons. We'll get into those in just a minute. But one of the main reasons is the special guest we have today. So this guy, before I even introduce him, let me just say he's the best looking man in the room.
That's right.
Best looking hat in the room.
That's right.
A lead pastor, successful entrepreneur. And I know I'm probably making him really uncomfortable right now, but that's okay. I can do that. He will never say that about himself, but I'll do that. Podcast master. I actually saw a fishing pole in the back of your truck. Are you a fishing master too?
I'm not really good at any of it.
Really? Well, I think you're not giving yourself enough credit. Dustin, how you doing?
I'm good.
Well, it's really, really good to have you. I know that our listeners are going to be really excited to and thankful that they listened in. And really, they should give you a round of applause. We're so glad that you're here. I'm really excited about this, and I'm thankful for the listeners who are listening to us. And I just want to say this. The other day I was on my walk, which I did another 20 miles this week, and I was praying for our future listeners. Really, I am, though. You know, we this isn't about us. This is, you know, something that we feel called to do, right? And we want it to have an impact. So I'm praying for those listeners, and I'm thinking, hey, this coming week, Dustin is going to be on to share his story, and it's impactful. And someone listening now and in the future is going to hear this and going to be blessed by it. So
yeah, no, I'm definitely excited. And also, I wonder how many people are keeping up with your little health journey over here and are praying for you to continue walking or maybe move that walk to a jog.
Yeah, you know, step it up just a little bit.
Yeah, power walk.
I actually did. I actually did this week. I did add jogging this week because I'm getting stronger and stronger. I also have a 15-pound weight pack on my back, too, so
Well, you've already got one on your stomach, so you might as well even.
It's really about all the arm swings, how you swing your arm. That burns the most amount of calories. So if I see you and you're not swinging them arms, I'm stopping.
I've seen Justin do it. Justin is a master speed walker.
Yeah. Well, you know, you had to do it in high school before they actually, like, threw weights in. They had to go down to the track, and you had to power walk. That was a real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps keep the momentum going, too, because the time doesn't stop. If you're trying to time myself, the clock doesn't stop. But the what are y'all doing? Y'all distracting me.
It's easy to do at your age. But so we're just having some technical difficulties. We're trying to figure it out. You know, it's not a big deal. So anyway, all right, we're back at it here. So, you know, we've got Dustin in the office, and he has this terrible hat on, and it kind of matches, you know, his shoes, you know, when I look at them.
Yeah. You called me, asked if I could come here, and I told you had ball practice with my son. So I got...
It's that dirty orange.
Yeah, dirty orange, but the hat's not dirty. The hat is mighty
It's been
fresh.
In storage for a while, so... Yeah.
I think what it is, it's not that Jeff doesn't like the hat. It's probably the fact that you had to eat crow this week, and it's not sitting well with your stomach. Yeah. And so, therefore, it's put you in a bad mood. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I'm not in a bad mood. I don't live or die by Alabama football. However, I mean, I'm just thankful we only lost by as little as we did. We should have lost by a lot more, to be honest. It was a pretty bad game.
It was a terrible game.
Yeah.
I've then got to where I have to, like, be careful who I'm around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to invite new people that are coming to our church over during the middle of a Tennessee Vols game.
Right.
Because they were like, there's no way I'm sitting up under this guy. I had plans to go over a friend's house yesterday, and I didn't go. So I watched a little bit of the very beginning of it, and after the fumble and I was like, I don't need to go over there.
Right.
And I didn't. I stayed at home and watched it with my wife and my.
The first half worked out better for us when your quarterback was on our team.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah, but then terrible. He decided to play for his team and then just switched around. You know? Yeah.
Anyway. I could see Dustin like, man, that guy yells a whole lot during the game, but at the pulpit, he's talking about being gentle and lowly. No. I mean, it's healthy though. You know, like I'll tell you, our boys are in a season of football, everything football. Even before coming up here, we were playing backyard football. And they know all the players on the volunteers. And they're just
was your son not an Alabama fan?
No.
What?
Never. Yeah, no.
Neither one of them.
They're bleeding orange. Yeah.
Yeah. Awful.
Yeah.
Raising them right.
Anyway. All right. Try.
Aren't you from Alabama?
I am.
It's okay.
Right. I'm not a bandwagon
guy. It's these people.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea why anybody, like, if they were not. So, like, if you were, just say you were like an LSU Tigers fan and you didn't grow up in the heart of Louisiana.
Like Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy. Just like Tommy.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. Tommy doesn't make sense.
I can't wrap my head around it.
What if your wife and her family grew up in the heart of Louisiana and they said, if you like LSU football or you die?
Well, I mean, I don't. No, if they would say that.
First off, they didn't say that.
No.
You and chose two, to go along because your team would have been who?
Well, my alma mater. It's still who I'm still a fan of. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, that's the University of Memphis Tigers.
Yeah.
I mean, we are 6-1.
Yeah.
This year.
And you beat Florida State.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I think we were ranked 26 at one point.
Almost.
We've lost twice and we're still ahead of you. All right, let's dive in, guys. Enough football talk. So, Dustin, we love to hear people's stories and just how it intertwines with the Lord and what He's doing. And man, we just want you to take us back to where you want to start and man, just how the Lord intervened, intercepted, and just the transformation that's taken place in your life. So we'll ask lots of questions along the way. So go for it, man.
I was born 9 pounds, 13 ounces.
So, wow!
Yeah,
I
was
fish.
Actually
caught a fish that big.
I was a big old baby. But yeah, so I am. I was born here in this area, West Tennessee, and my mom was, you know, pretty much single raising me, and my grandmother had a lot to do with that, and then. My mother ended up getting with my stepdad, who they're together. He's been in my life pretty much since I was one. So I was always, you know, brought up. She went to church growing up, and so did my grandmother, and they just made sure I was there, you know, all throughout my life. So I was always had this, you know, this understanding and this knowledge. They made sure that they did their job as far as their, you know, teaching me and making sure that I was setting up under the Word of God. And I grew up in a church that really was a biblically sound, just very solid church as far as preaching expositionally through the Word, and just really, really solid. And I sat under that forever, you know, and really, to be honest with you, was oblivious to what I was even sitting under and didn't have a clue. It wouldn't pay any attention. And I guess when I was younger, everything was kind of work based for me back then for some reason, and I don't say I really was ever following the Lord, really truly, actually obeying God, but eventually in high school I kind of just got spun off a little bit and acting a little wild, and like I said, I had a stepdad that was kind of raising me then, and then my real dad's not really never been in my life, and. Been an addict for a long time, so in and out of prison he has been, but like I said, my mom and him still made sure that I was there throughout high school. I'd still even go, and then eventually I just got to where I drank just a ton. So I'd say probably right out of high school I got to where I was I know it sounds crazy, but we got to where we were pretty much drinking, you know, daily. I don't even remember how I went about doing that. A lot of us have had them stories where we just were, you know, you live in the country, there's nothing to do out here, literally. Back then it was really nothing, so we rode around and, you know, rode through the river, hung out with our, you know, friends. It's just what people did. So I just found myself, you know, involved in that and hanging out, and that was my community, and it was a, you know, obviously a sinful lifestyle, but and never had any intentions of it becoming a problem, but it eventually it did. It became a, you know, a pretty bad problem. So I got to where I like moved out of my parents' house, and I had plans to pretty much stay working with my dad. He's a home builder, so I was going to work with him, and that was my plan for my life. I wasn't going to do the college thing. I didn't really feel like that was who I was, and so I went and did, you know, just manual labor stuff. And then 2008, we had this economy, you know, problem where everything kind of crashed. And so 2008, I was 21, somewhere around in there, 2021. My dad and I were talking, and he's like, hey, look, I'm not going to fire you or anything, but we're slowing down, and you might want to start looking. So I did the best thing that that anybody could do. I went and found me a job I went to work at Budweiser. So it's a great job, right? You got a drinking problem, so you decide that you're going to go work at a beer company. So I did that, and right before all that happened, I ended up getting a DUI, and obviously lost my license, all that. So I had to deal with all that stuff. And when I got hired on there, I had to work on getting everything back right and all that. Cause it takes a while. You have a year or so, or however long, till you can, you know, drive again. So I had all this mess go on. So I just got my license back, going through all that, working there, working nights, just living, doing just whatever.
So was there any time along this path where you're living this lifestyle that your mom had conversations with you about, like your dad and addiction, and now you're following in this path? Like, was there any conversations along the way about that, and what are you doing? You're making poor choices, or?
Yeah, for sure. Two different people, my mom and my grandmother, monumental in my life. Mm-hmm. Obviously my wife now, that's later, but yeah, man, she would always tell me that, hey, you got that in your family,
right?
You know, so you need to be careful, because you're going to end up, you know, you got grandparents that were that way, and mm-hmm. your dad's side of the family that they're that way. And so you just need to be, you know, be careful with that. And, one of the things that just always stuck with me is my grandmother, man, she is, super solid, super solid. And she would always like write me letters, and in the letters, she would tell me how much she loved me and how she was proud of me. And I got to the point where, how you proud of me? You know what I mean? Like, how's this the case? Like, but she just was very encouraging. I love you. Lord loves you, you know, always that way. So yeah, I would say that they were warning me, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, but I was still, man, I was still involved in church. Mm-hmm. Like I just hid all this, you know, like, and it was not really something that it was hard to see, you know, if you wanted to find out,
sure.
You know, but I was a Sunday morning guy that went on Sundays, and, you know, I was there, and just still dealt with, you know, alcoholism and stuff.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you say that, you know, coming from your grandparents, because I remember my mom having a conversation with me about alcohol, and she was just trying to educate me on it. And she's like, listen, she said, Jeff, you know the reason why I don't drink? And I said, why? She said, I'm afraid I'll like it. A lot. And because of it running in our family, there were some others that, you know, it just consumed their life and really took their life from them. And so it was very easy for my mom to say, see that person? That's why.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was a lot of that throughout my life. And one thing that she told me that really stuck with me is she said, Jeff, if you never tried, it'll never have a hold on you.
Yeah.
And that was just something I kept remembering when tempted, you know, along the way. But anyway.
That's well, good. And similarly, I mean, like, when I think about it, you know, obviously I've, you know, drank before. I mean, now it just, you know, we don't, you know, for a lot of reasons. It runs in both sides of our families. But also I was thinking, like, nobody sets out to be addicted to these things.
Right.
You know, so to your point, like, you play with it enough, and then if there is the family history side of it too, I mean, it, you know, it can really be a bad thing.
Like, I can't imagine you had the thought of like, hey, let's go float down the river and drink a couple of beers, and one day I'm going to get a DUI.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just the way sin works. It just, it keeps going till it destroys. Mm-hmm. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I worked there, and I started, you know, kind of working my way up, I guess, the corporate ladder at Budweiser, which was the plan, you know, just to work hard. And I've always had work ethic, you know, even though I had, you know, a bunch of problems, I still would work hard. So I, So I worked my way up and got on, you know, day shift, and then I was able to get a CDL, and so I was able to start driving a beer truck, and so I started doing that, and I ended up getting a route, you know, like a where you run a route, mm-hmm. and it was Bill Street, and so, which let's say again, that's even the worst place, the worst job, and the worst place to be. During that time.
So right? As you were delivering, did you hear like this band playing on Bill Street? I heard one, you know, I heard they were pretty good back in the day.
Well, so Bill Street, it's a famous entertainment district in Memphis. So just for people who don't know, and you're referring to my band, but
what band was it?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to move on.
Did y'all ever, what
was the band?
Did y'all ever play that circuit?
Yeah, we did. We played a lot of festivals. There's a couple of high-profile venues there that a lot of bands come. The band I played in was Sheltered Life.
And you said festivals, but did you mean fair?
No.
Festivals.
Okay. It was homeschool festivals. All the homeschool kids came and did like their little, you know how homeschool people are. That's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with homeschool, but they kind of do everything kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of they... You know, they want the community and all that stuff, and so they have to do their own kind of thing. So it would be fitting that you have your own band called Sheltered Life, and you go to the homeschool festival. Yeah.
We definitely didn't live a sheltered life, I'll tell you that. But anyway, those were, fun times, good times. But anyway, so you're in definitely an entertainment district there when you were out. So.
Yeah, so that's where I was at, and that's what I did. During that time, I got with my who is now my wife. So we were just dating, and so I.
How'd you guys meet?
At a bar, and we would. Well, I think we heard of each other or knew each other from school. We went to school together, but we all went to the same kind of hangout together. Mm-hmm. So we were always there, and then we would go anywhere. You know, there's not a lot to do again where we're from, and so we would always be around in same kind of gatherings. And so I'd always see her and stuff, and we would just talk. You know, hang out. She's a little older than me, but we were, I just never really even tried to talk to her. For one, she was older than me, and she's got this, like, way about her where you think she's, like, all business all the time because she's, like, super nervous to talk to people. Mm-hmm. But her facial expressions makes it look like she's super serious, and you're thinking, like, I'm not going to even, try to deal with that, you know? And so I found out after I talked to her, I was like, oh, she's not like that at all. She's just super quiet and hoping the whole time nobody talks to her, you know? Yeah.
So she wasn't mad at me the other day when I saw her at the baseball game?
No, she told me she saw you, I think. And then, but does she look mad? She does,
notice,
right?
Notice how Dustin didn't say yes or no. He was like, did she look mad at you? Because she could have been. Yeah. I mean,
no. I've had that conversation. Like, hey, look, you. It's not like a bad face. It's just like one of these deals where you have like a. Does that make sense?
My wife is the exact same way.
We talk about that with mine
now. Half
too.
The time she is mad at me, but her face is the same if she's mad or not mad.
Yeah, mine's not mad at me. Aaron's just more reserved and she's kind of quiet. And then people always think that she's just real standoffish, but she's just nervous to talk to people. Is kind of how it is.
Like our pastor won't even look in my wife's general direction during the sermon because she makes this like super intense, like paying attention, and the pastor thinks that.
So she's saying questioning something wrong his or something.
Theology. She's really examining,
analyzing it.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, so we can all relate.
Yep. We're with you.
So we started dating, and so I was working there, kind of, just going with it, man. And eventually, the alcohol thing was just still as bad. And I bought a house. You know, I think I was like 21 or 22. And again, like I said, I had. Like decent sense when it come to like, you know, finances and also somewhat, and then, you know, doing right things. I just had a terrible issue, you know? And so anyway, I bought the house, and we were getting kind of serious, and, I had a big problem. I wasn't in Christ. So obviously you don't have victory over any of these things. And so I lied. And
in that time though, were you thinking, like, man, I've gone to church my whole life, I'm a believer? Were you completely convinced that you weren't?
I was 100% convinced about that time that I was pretty much dead in my sin. Knew if somebody was to ask me, like, hey, where do you stand with the Lord?
Right.
I would tell them, man, I'm I'm far from God.
Yeah.
You know mm-hmm. that. Well, I mean, you can ask people that all the time. Hey, do you consider yourself close to God or far from God? Right. It's a good way to get a conversation started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would have to say in that time, I would say I was far from God.
Okay.
You know? Mm-hmm. But cool thing is, you know, I went to church, so I started bringing her. Mm-hmm. And she'd never been. Mm-hmm. And so she never grew up in that. And so she began to go sit under the Word and not with the same thoughts as me and not with, you know, this.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
You know, just such a, new. You know, yeah. not just a rebel. Like I was just trying to go against all things, you know, that was of the Lord. And she wasn't. She thought it was very cool that I went to church. And wild as this is, I remember she told me, she said, I told a friend of mine that the next person I date is going to be somebody who goes to church. Well, mm-hmm.
You're looking at.
Yeah, she got me. I was like, this is crazy. But she said, I thought it was really cool that you went. I didn't understand what a hypocrite looked like. You know, I didn't know what somebody that just went through the motions looked like, because she never went to church or anything. So, man, we got serious. I was still working there, and then again, I wasn't ever honest. I lied a lot, and I'm a narcissist, and had obviously a drinking problem. So I lied to her one night, told her that I was at deer camp going to hunting, and I never went home. I just stayed at Bill Street and stayed out all night, and I got another DUI on the way home. Mm. This time it was like a big deal, because I had a house and I had a job, and I had a really good job. Mm. As far as financially, it did well. And then I knew that if I got in trouble again, then I was going to end up like going to jail for a long period of time, because it ain't been long enough from the first one or whatever. So this one was kind of bad. I ended up like falling asleep at a red light and they had to like bust my truck open and all this crazy mess. And so I obviously had to go, and I called her from jail. And it's like, hey, I need you to come get me. She said, well, I thought you were so-and-so. I was like, well, we'll talk about it. Just come get me. Yeah. And so I'll pay you back, you know, whenever you come get me out. So that's what happened. I ended up, she come and got me out. And I believe around this time, to be honest with you, is when the Lord really started dealing with her, as far as with her salvation. And mm-hmm. I believe during this time, she really began to follow the Lord, you know. And it was really special how it all, when you look back at it now.
Right.
So I ended up explaining to her, hey, look, I lied. You know, I was out doing stupid stuff with a bunch of dumb things with people that I shouldn't have been around. And, you know, haven't been honest. And so, you know, just apologized to her and asked her if, you know, would she stay with me and we'd work through it. And she said she would. And so as soon as she would, I remember my grandma, she's like, if you don't marry that girl, she's going to leave you and you're going to be like in bad shape. And so I ended up going to buy a ring like right after that. And I proposed to her after this just happened, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what in the world? Like, I don't know. I'm thinking to myself, like, why would you marry this?
Did your outfit match your hat at this when you did the proposal? Were you wearing the orange jumpsuit and the brown flip flops?
No, I don't know what I was.
So you weren't actually in prison.
Oh, that suit. No, I got out. She got me out.
Okay.
I went to jail, not prison. I didn't do hard time.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
But no, I had this little thing. I had some connections down there, obviously, because it was downtown, Memphis, and so we were able to go down there and have a great night. And I was able to propose to her, and she said yes and was just ecstatic, you know. Yeah. And the whole time, now when I look back, I'm like, how in the world, how wonderful is God to be able to allow this to still take place? But she loved me, and she saw something in me that obviously I didn't, you know, see in myself.
So, low standards,
right? Man. She had low standards. Yeah, she's way better looking than I deserve. Yeah, and so it was just It's a crazy thing. So she said yes. Crazy thing. I mean, I'm good to continue through all this. So yeah. Started going to court for this thing. So I knew that I was like, I'm going to end up going.
Hey, we're already in court. Let's just do this thing.
Yeah. So we worked it all out where we had a wedding date set, and then we were going to get married. And what was going to happen is I was going to not go on my honeymoon. I had enough time. I had it worked out with the court system where they were going to drop the charge and I was going to have to do 30 days in jail. It's 2 for 1, so it'd only be 15 days. And so what was going to happen, I was going to get married on Saturday, then go in and do my time, and then I'd be out. And I worked it out with the job and all that, and it wasn't going to give me a second offense. They were going to, like, lessen the offense and all that. So I was like, all right, we're set up. So I go thinking this is what's going to happen. I'm getting married that weekend. And they said that the DA wouldn't sign it, that I need to come back. It's like, well, how's this going to work now? So I just told her, I was like, look, we're going to get married on Saturday. We're going on like a little mini honeymoon. So I came back on a Wednesday, and the DA said, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. And just gave me a second offense, DUI. And then so I lost my license for 2 years, pretty much right after in that moment. And so then obviously what happens when you don't have a driver's license, you can't drive a truck.
Right.
Then you lose your license. And so I remember like coming home, like I have nothing to do. Like I don't even know what I'm fixing to do. Like I just got married 4 days ago, and I don't have a driver's license, and I don't have a clue what's about to happen. And so I made a phone call on the way home and to a guy that I know, and told him that I was in a pinch and I needed some help. And if he could help me, you know, he owned a company, a plumbing company. And if he could help me, I'd love to come to work, because I got to do something. And so obviously I left the job down there and went to work at a plumbing company, making a quarter or a third of the money, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of what happened. You know, like I ended up losing my job, and now I had pretty much almost 2 years that I had to figure this out. Well, you know, you're a little pressed now when you're when things ain't
right.
You know, like, so I obviously wasn't leaning on the Lord. So I leaned on the only thing I knew to lean on, which was obviously alcohol. And so that really like ramped up to the worst it's ever been, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and during this whole situation, still going to church. My wife was faithful, still there, you know, and all that. So the picture of a hypocrite, right? So that's kind of how it was all going down. And so I ended up through that time period, my wife got pregnant. So she got pregnant and ended up, we found out we were expecting our first one. I remember I went to my parents. You know, you like tell your parents. Like you're excited, right?
Yeah.
So my wife has to drive me over there.
And I don't mean to laugh.
It's fine, dude. It's fine. Hey, we're past that.
Yeah.
All right. So she tells me, like, I remember tell my grandmother, and she's like, "What are you thinking?" And I'm like, "Well, I wasn't." You know, we just.
This is the same grandmother that was writing notes, right?
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
Yeah.
How long have y'all been married to this point?
It was like 6 months after we've been married, found out she was having a child. So anyway, we had the baby. We had the baby on this. Then after we had the baby, she had to drive herself home from all that. So it was just a terrible situation, man. So you talking about feeling like the lowest of low, like I can't provide. And so I can't do it. I can't even drive. She had to wake the baby up and wake me up. We had to go to drop me off at work in the morning and then come back. So it was just a wild deal, man. It was a really wild deal for a long time. And I was struggling really hard during that time, like financially, I couldn't figure out what to do. And I told my wife, I was like, people argue within their marriage. A lot of times, you know, everybody knows this. If you're ever counseled anybody, like money is one of the things that people argue about. So we talked about that, you know, it was an argument all the time about how are we going to pay things? And she said, we need a tithe. And I said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
You're like, no, another option.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? We don't have any money and you want to give more money anyway.
Yeah. So I thought it was wild that she said that. And so I began to just say, okay, you know, if that's what you think is going to work, but I think it's stupid. And so we did it. And so for them, that happened early when we started struggling. So for that whole time period, when you just saw the Lord's provision, you know, like he was just faithful, because the scripture teaches that he will be, you know, we know that. And so what was he faithful to what was he doing? My wife was solid, right? Mm-hmm. She was loving me and she was obeying God. And so we see like the Lord just constantly showing up. And it was all kind of crazy little things that would happen. One time I preached on the genealogy today of through Genesis 5, and we were talking about baby names. And I remember getting a baby book from a friend, and I opened it up and it was $100 bill in there. Like just things like that, like weird stuff that just normally like it just, and all this stuff stuck with me. And so it was, the Lord started like, all right, I'm in this spot. I have nowhere else to turn. I'm like beyond rock bottom. I feel like, you know, I'm to the point where I don't even like looking at myself in the mirror. And so,
yeah, I mean, he says, test me in this area, you know, so for your wife to kind of zone in on that, that's some discernment,
I can,
man.
I can imagine the conversation of you telling her that tithing is a dumb idea, and I can see her going, you want me to tell you what a dumb idea is?
Yeah. Everything you
losing your license for 2 years and me driving you around.
Yeah.
No, man, I think it's so cool because very similar experiences when God has asked us to step out and give money that we didn't technically have to give, you know, as far as like we had plans for that. That was savings. That was, you know, that was our security or whatever it is. And he's like, just be obedient with it. And literally within 24 hours, someone else has given us the exact same amount of money, you know, without even knowing. And those kinds of things, those are just markers of God's faithfulness.
Yeah, you say that, and not to cut you off, but like I remember when Aaron and I had a goal to pay off our student loans early in our marriage. And like, kid you not, we would turn people down and go to lunch after church because we'd go back to the apartment and make a grilled cheese. And 1 month we had this goal to like put a certain amount down. And I kid you not, a reimbursement check from our insurance company was like 25 cents over the amount that would have gotten us to the to the point that we wanted to make a payment. And so just little things like that. And you're like, now how in the world would anybody know our goal and that we needed that amount? You know, so test me in that area.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how the whole, that's when things started really starting to get to you know, towards that. So,
Well, I think what we need to do is we got to pause on this one, and we're going to come back and finish it up with a part two. So, guys, thanks for listening, and tune back in to hear the rest of Dustin's story.